everybody, and welcome to the 500 Tabs podcast. I'm Kaveh Taharian.
And I'm Hannah Hillam.
And we are your hosts. Hostaroo. Thanks for coming back and joining us. We're very excited to continue the story, or I guess I'm excited. I don't know how excited you are, Hannah, but hopefully you're excited.
I got a little bit of excitement going. Yeah.
Good, good. This is our first ever two-parter that we're doing. Although I guess technically the last episode you were...
Mine was
you
a did rabbit like a hole.
Rabbit hole. It wasn't an official two-parter, but it was like a primer for a two-parter.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, first two-parter.
And that's where we are today.
And I want to hear... Oh, well, I'm like, let's get going. But no, if we first we got to go...
Check in. Oh, I was going to tell you. So we talked about... I don't remember if it was the last episode or the one before. We talked about the Prince of Persia game and how they dubbed it in Farsi. Remember?
Yeah, yeah.
So I downloaded the demo and I played it the other day and I was laughing because they have the cutscenes, right? So the cutscenes are all in... But... It's unintentional, and I'm not laughing at like the voice performers. Like, you know, they did a good job. It was just this unintended consequence, which is really funny, which something you probably don't know is that every immigrant woman from Iran watches Turkish soap operas.
Turkish.
This is like a huge, huge, huge industry. Yeah. The Turkish soap opera scene is like massive. And
weird. All I know about Turkey is that they're good at plastic surgery. And they have cats.
Yes, and hair implants.
A lot of cats.
Yes. Oh, cats. A lot of cats. Yeah. I've had the pleasure of going to Istanbul. It's a beautiful city. Yeah.
Did you see
there's
the cats?
Everywhere. There's so many cats.
Everywhere.
There's a million stray cats.
That's all I care about.
Yeah. But it's funny because everybody in my family and extended family and everybody I know all watch Turkish soap operas. And so what they do is they take these Turkish soap operas and then they dub them in Farsi.
Oh.
And then they get distributed. Originally, it was distributed amongst, you know, in like DVDs and stuff, but now they sort of all watch them on like weird pirated sites.
Yeah. Wow.
So the unintended consequence of Prince of Persia is like they clearly animated it for English and then they had the voice actors speak in Farsi.
So you're like, Mom?
Yeah, literally. So I was like, it's this over the top, like, you know, it's video game cut sequence. It's not like subtle. It's like that's part of how the games work. So it actually ends up playing like a Turkish soap opera. Dubbed in Farsi.
It's incredible. I got to watch a video or something like a YouTube video.
I took a video of it. I'll send it to you. It's really funny.
It's really funny.
It was great, which unintentionally ends up being like a more authentic experience.
Exactly. I was going to say, isn't that more like of a Persian experience than just some guy talking? Like
literally, yes.
And animating the voice or the face.
Yes. So I couldn't tell if I tried to go on IMDb. I didn't try to go on IMDb. I went on IMDb to look it up. So I think the actors are maybe reading all the lines in all the different languages. I have no idea. If anybody who's listening knows, let me know. But I didn't necessarily see one actor playing like the role speaking Farsi versus one speaking the one in Spanish or English or whatever.
Oh.
So there might be that they're all speaking every part.
That would be crazy.
Which sort of adds to that. But anyway, I just thought that was really funny.
It's really so bizarre.
It was not what I expected at all. And I was like, it just tickled me. I was like, this is the funniest thing ever. It's great. But that's the only update I have about what we had talked about before. Any updates from you in terms of any of the tabs or anything that we had discussed
before? I'm
looking
at the notes and it looks like I just wrote, sup, dork, right after Prince of Persia. So no.
Yeah.
I saw that you were writing, and so I wrote that, and I forgot to delete it. So
and I didn't even notice.
What's up, dork? You want to tell
me?
Hey, how are you?
Just there's remember that Prince of Persia game I was telling you about before?
Yeah, no, I don't care.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
No,
I really do care. I've only ever watched people play it. Anyway, but yeah, I don't have anything. So
nothing. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
you want to get into it?
If that's the deal, let's just get into it. Let's get into part two about the Jonestown, I did it. I knew that I wasn't going to, I didn't want to do it, but I did do it. The Johnstown flood.
Okay.
Okay. So just to recap, remember last time, Johnstown is a town in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Here, let me
Steel
make my
town.
Notes bigger because my eyes are getting weak as I get older. They're weak. So... Johnstown's a town in Pennsylvania in 1853, I'll get through this, I promise. In 1853, they complete the South Fork Dam. It's an earth dam that's made of soil. Remember, it's the giant M&M with the peanut center, the peanut core. Remember that whole thing? You've already forgotten. I love it.
Yep. No. We'll do a test. I'll pass the quiz.
Okay, good. It was meant to serve the local canal system, but by the end of the decade, the canal becomes obsolete because railways come to dominate America. The dam and the surrounding area sort of passes hands for about 25 years because no one really cares anymore. And it's like not a thing as much as it used to be until Benjamin Ruff purchases the dam and its surrounding areas in order to create the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club. He makes a bunch of changes to the dam. They're all terrible. They're all meant to like be cool and make it like a nice, you know, hunting and fishing club, but none of it's in service of making the dam useful or fixing it or anything like that. It's just all bad idea after bad idea.
And it raises the water level, right? If I remember correctly, like all the fish they pour into
the changes, they pour the fish into it. The changes that they make don't raise the water level. What they do is they lower the they lower the edge of the dam. Remember, it was like the edge of the
bathtub.
That's right. They lower it so that it could be wider so that carriages can get through.
That's
and they plug, you know, and then there's the guy who like stole the copper wires, basically, which was the tubes, the guy that they bought it from who wanted to make money. So he sold that for scrap and they just filled that up. They're like, whatever, we don't need pipes to drain stuff. Just fill it with dirt and rocks. So they do all that. They do a bunch of terrible changes. They put in the fish. They put in the grill, like the netting, so that the spillway doesn't allow the fish to escape. That's just our quick recap. And
like then on the May 30th, 18th.
Yes, exactly. Like the shower drain, like the hair is all getting caught up in their hair and fish.
How you have
that's
to
what
like explain this to me in pure metaphor.
No, it's that's how I process it myself. That's how I was like, as I'm reading, this is why it's good to talk to you, because I'm like, you and I have similar brains, or I'm like, don't understand what I'm reading, so I have to simplify
it. I need someone to be like, here's a simple concept. This is how it is. Yes. Okay, go on.
That's the same way. I'm the same way. And then on May 30th, 1889, two storms converge over Pennsylvania, and they dump almost 10 inches of rain because they had a walk-off battle, one from the north, one from the south, and they just converge and make one giant storm. Okay, so that's roughly what we covered. If you guys haven't listened to the episode before this, I would suggest going to do that, because I get into all of that and explain sort of all that context is important for what ends up happening on this episode. So the story begins on the morning of May 31st, and Elias Unger, who is the president of the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club, wakes up. And it's the late 1800s, right? So he's probably like, and he's like wearing a nightcap, and he's like wearing the
robe. And whenever he breathes out, the nightcap tip, like the tip of the nightcap goes up.
Yeah, it goes.
Yep. Someone has tuberculosis.
Someone's got TB. They're coughing in the background. He's wearing striped pajamas. Oh, and he's like, what's going on here? And he hears sounds outside, and
he's
he puts on his slippers.
Inexplicably British.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they're still immigrating back and forth, I guess, at this point. And he grabs his candlestick holder with like the single candle on it, and he goes to investigate.
Okay.
And he's like, what's going on here? And his accent's just going to change over and over. I don't know what it
Please.
Is. It's going to go off the wall. So he goes outside, and he sees that Lake Conemaugh is raising rapidly. So this is probably around like 7 a.m. And he's like, oh shit, this is not good. This is bad. So he throws on some wool, you know, whatever, wool pants and like a top hat, whatever they were wearing in the 1800s at that point. I don't know. He changes it. Maybe he's still wearing his nightcap. I can't prove
I'm
it otherwise.
I'm picturing him just wearing pants and a top hat. So thank you for the visual.
That's true. That's all he's wearing.
Yeah. So gotta get ready.
He's like, look at my white chest hairs. They need to know.
Ooh.
And he runs out. Hey, don't knock white chest hairs. Some of us have started to get them already.
I don't know how to respond to that.
There's nothing. Just let it be.
Well, that makes two of us then.
Yeah, right. It's true. So he's like, oh, man, this is bad. He throws on his wool pants and his top hat, wearing nothing else. That's all. And he runs out to sea, and the water levels of the dam are suddenly now within 2 feet of the top of the crest. Not good. This is not good for a gigantic dam like this. If someone were to take like an oversized dump in that reservoir, that dam's just going to dump over and spill everywhere. You're screwed.
Mm-hmm. Dang, I had some plans.
Yeah. Gotta hold it, Hannah. Gotta hold it.
I can only do it when it's outside in an unstable infrastructure.
If that's the only way you can relax, I'm not here to judge you. I'm not here to dump shame. So Unger realizes the danger. This is not like your typical, you know, because like stuff's happened before over the years, right? Like there have been some like water increases. There's been some sort of like threats of something maybe going poorly, but this is clearly different. That mm-hmm. storm has just dumped so much water. It's dumped, right? You want to laugh at the word dump, I'm sure. It's dumped water. Don't forget, of course, all the debris that has now gathered at the end of the dam as well, because all these different sources of from the streams and stuff have dumped like broken trees and boulders and stuff on the right. other side. So he's like, oh, shit, this is bad. So he goes and he grabs a bunch of dudes from around the club who work there to help unclog the spillway, because the spillway had become obstructed by all the debris. So it's hair. He said,
why is it hair? Yeah.
It's always hair. Right. It's hair from like the shower debris.
Just a ton of hair.
Too much hair. He's like, all of our wives have been showering. There's too much hair in the spillway. It's blocked. We need to unclog this. And the club's not really in season right now, so there's not that many people there. So he's just grabbing whoever he can that happens to be on the grounds. And, you know, Rockefeller's not there to help Lynn. He's off doing like businessy railroad stuff or whatever.
Exploiting.
And so he's like, I got to exploit. I don't have time for this right now. So they got to grab what they can. One of the people that they grab is this guy named John Park. Now, John Park is this 22-year-old kid that the club had hired to help with like some sewage drainage something or other project. And at that point, he had only had 3 years of work experience and no degree. But this was consistent with the laws of the time that he had right. studied civil engineering for three years at the University of Pennsylvania. So that qualified him to practice engineering. You can't fault them for that. That was just sort of what it
you
was at the time.
You could do anything back then. You could walk you in could and do be it. Like, it's I'm okay. a doctor.
Snake oil or whatever. But mm-hmm. I'm not here to knock on John Park. So despite being a young blood, John Park had a lot of helpful observations. He kind of was able to assess what was going on in a way that was that lined up with contemporary understandings of damming and overtopping failures and all that. He yeah. noted that Lake Conemaugh was now roughly 7.4 feet deeper than usual. He also, remember, because there's way more water in it than usual.
Yeah.
He noted that he also observed that the overtopping depth of the lake water pouring over the dam was roughly 1 foot deep and was concentrated at the sag in the center of the dam, which is the weakest part. Mm. And lastly, Park noticed that the water was steadily forming rills and gullies in the downstream face of the structure. What that means, basically, remember, it's a triangle. And the water right. that's being held is on the right side of it. And on the left side of it is, that's what he's talking about. So it's sort of forming these little streams that are coming down. So what that means is that the water is consistently starting to pour over it.
Oh, okay.
We now refer to this formation as surface detachment. This is a shout out to all you engineers and people who understand dams much better than I do.
Or like
and it
me,
typically
who
represents
I can't be in my body.
You're an engineer. I remember you had 3 years to
I was talking about mental.
Mental,
but
yeah,
yeah,
emotional detachment.
I went to school for engineering.
Yeah, I remember. 3 years. So you can practice it now. So surface detachment typically represents the first phase of overtopping failure on dams.
Okay.
So what that means is that the crucial thing that you have to do at this stage is to get water out of the lake to prevent it from spilling over the center. Because the center of the dam is where it's structurally weakest. Much like middle-aged men who no longer have a core muscle. Now we all get bellies. That's how dams are. It's the core. The center is what's really going to screw you over. Yeah.
Are you just going to like explode one day or something?
If we're comparing you to a dam. I might start spilling over. Yes. All my fluids in my body might start just coming over the middle of me because I didn't do enough sit-ups.
You'll get on it.
I'm trying. So most of the workers remained on top of the dam, plowing earth to raise the crest above the water. So again, the visual here is you're in the bathtub's overflowing, so you start grabbing stuff to put on the side of the bathtub so that the water doesn't pour over it. Some are plowing earth to raise the crest above the water, while others try to pile mud and rock on the face to save the eroding wall. So they're sliding on the other side of the triangle, right? The one that faces away from the water, and they're trying to patch it with whatever. And they're frantically doing this, and they're scrambling, and shit's getting real. And somebody in this group is like, hey, you know what we could do is we could raise the steel net on the spillway, you know, where all the hair had gathered from all the showering from before.
And by hair, he means wood and trees,
yes,
and leaves.
Yes, trees, and boulders, all that kind of stuff.
Want to make sure everyone's clear.
Yes. I mean, there's probably hair there as well. You never know. People go swimming in that lake.
That's true.
And Unger was like, and lose the fish? Absolutely not. That's not appropriate. We're not going to do that.
Oh,
gotta
no.
Support, gotta protect your investments.
Oh, yeah.
So the water keeps rising and the men keep scrambling and it's not good. It's just, this is clearly a shit show. So eventually it sinks in and Unger is like, this could end very poorly. So we need to prepare for the worst and we need to warn all the towns and villages and stuff around the area. So
wow.
He grabs Park, right? He grabs the young kid and he says, you need to grab your fastest horse and you need to go warn people. So naturally, Park goes and he finds Shadowfax.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
And he's like, show us the meaning of haste. I know
yeah.
that Lord of the Rings is what you kept thinking of with the last one. So I tried to put as many references into here as I could.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
So he tells Shadowfax to show him the meaning of haste. And they go to the nearby town of South Fork to send warnings to Johnstown. And right, he rides there and Park gets there. He's scrambling. He's been trying to like move dirt and like assess all this stuff all morning. He's tired. He's just like out of his mind. And he sees a bunch of people in town.
Poor guy.
At this point, yeah, he's trying to do the best he can. I honestly feel for this kid. He's like,
yeah,
he was responsible. And you know, in the stuff that you read later, he's like, he clearly feels like he was responsible for it. And you go on to find that like none of this is his fault.
Oh.
He's just this kid who tries. So be nice to young people. Young people they're trying their hardest. This kid is very much like of that ilk. Oh. So he goes into South Fork and he sees a little crowd and he's like, dude, the dam is like overflowing. It's freaking out. We don't know what's going to happen. You guys need to telegraph, you know, you need to telegraph Johnstown. You need to let everybody in the area know that this thing could go, something could go horribly wrong. And we need to either get to higher ground, do whatever you can. And he doesn't know where the telegraph office is, even though that's what Unger had sent him to do. So he just sort of grabs a couple of guys there and he's like, listen, you and you, please go to the telegraph office and tell them to, you know, send a telegram down to Johnstown and warn them. And then he just sort of like turns around and goes back.
They did it,
and
right?
The two people.
Right.
Not immediately, it seems
okay.
like. Because remember, the theme of this is everybody in this area and everybody in this town and everybody in this sort of vicinity is kind of like, okay, we've seen floods before. We've experienced this kind of stuff before. Don't be, you know, the sky's not falling. It was like a little bit of like a Chicken Little situation where everybody sort of blows it off. They still do it. They're just not like running with the urgency of what Park had sort of insisted on. It does eventually get there. But so what you'll learn throughout the story is that this game of telephone becomes more and more infuriating as it goes down the line. Park hops back on Shadowfax. He shows him the meaning of haste again. And he runs back to the dam. And by the time that he's gone to warn everybody and come back, Unger's changed his mind, thankfully. And he's like, okay, forget it. We gotta take out the fish screens. There's no way around this. He's relented. And so they're like, cool. And, you know, all the dudes get to work. They get like a bunch of screws, whatever. I don't exactly know what they're doing at this time. But they're basically doing their best to take this filter out so that the water can pour out through the spillway. But now the screens are so jammed by the water and the debris that it's not even possible. They waited too long. It's too late. They can't get it out. But there's good news here. The fish are still in the lake.
thank goodness. I can breathe easy.
That's what I was worried about.
All I care about is those
and
fish.
Park also noticed that the lake had officially begun overtopping
officially,
the dam
officially.
During his
episode.
Officially.
Officially. Sorry, I had to interrupt and yell at you.
No, I love it. Officially, I could have missed that dad joke and I would have kicked myself forever about it.
Wow.
And so it's officially overtopping. And he looks around and he starts making a bunch of calculations and he's like, nope. This is not happening. This is not happening. This is donezo. This is bad. It's gonna happen. And so he concludes from his observations that, the lake had reached its peak depth and is going to start falling.
Oh.
So at around 1:30 p.m., the writing's on the wall, and he's like, dude, this is done. It's going to happen. There's nothing we can do. So Unger orders all of his men to fall back to high ground on both sides of the dam, and they couldn't do anything but just sort of watch and wait.
Watch.
They just had to, like, prepare for it. So during the day in Johnstown, meanwhile, at the bottom of the hill, the situation had worsened, and the water levels rose to as high as, like, 10 feet in the streets. Remember? Oh, so the flood had just already come because of the rain, not even from the dam yet.
Wow.
And people were, like, trapped in their houses, and they're just sort of like, this is kind of, like, not great. Like, this is kind of, like, the worst thing we've ever seen. They have their own problems. They're just dealing with what they can. And sort of no one's really paying attention to the warnings coming from the telegraph operator. Like I said, they had had a few scares, like, years before, and they just sort of were like, I think there was one that they said that had allegedly almost happened in, like, 1891 or two, and nothing came of it.
Right.
So they were just kind of like, it's okay.
It's like
we're...
it's like people in Florida. Like when I was, I'll make this make sense. Florida, like, I was in Orlando. The only time I've ever been to Florida, it was, I got caught in a hurricane, Hurricane Matthew. And
seriously?
Everyone, oh yeah. I was the Harry Potter world, and then the winds were like whipping my hair around, and I just like,
that's,
I gotta,
God,
go
telling
Hogwarts.
You that you're engaging in witchcraft and punishing you.
You're right. I caused Hurricane Matthew. but no, I was like, so we really quick. Sorry, it's a side story.
No, go ahead.
We go to Walmart because, of course, it's the biggest place nearest, and everyone's in there buying guns. All the guns are sold out. All the candles are sold out.
Shoot the hurricane? What are you going to do?
First of all, Walmart had a full on gun section. And they were all gone. And then people were just like, yep, just going to stay. I'm going to stay. And it's like, no one, you hear about these, like, people are like, the governor's like, please leave. And no one leaves because they're like, well,
no,
it's just
leaving.
Like last time. But then you get every once in a while, you get a Hurricane Andrew and it destroys everything. But yeah, that's just what this is reminding me of like, well, we've done this before. Let's worry about our own issues and ignore
exactly.
the telegraphs.
Ignore the telegraphs. And so, finally, at around 3 p.m., Lake Conemaugh finally breaches the dam and sends approximately 3.8 billion gallons of water racing down the valley. Yeah.
I can't comprehend.
I can't comprehend it either. It sends it down the valley towards South Fork, East Conemaugh, and eventually Johnstown.
How fast is it moving? Do you know?
I'll tell you.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So the water rushed forth. This is where, so from here on out, this is just going to be like worse and worse.
Okay.
So
I'm ready.
The water rushed forth at an estimated 424,000 cubic feet per second, which is similar to someone turning on Niagara Falls to spill into the valley for 36 minutes.
No. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's
so
horrible.
It took a little bit over an hour for the entire lake to drain into the valley, which is an astounding average rate at about 8 inches per minute. So this is what I kept thinking of is like when you fill up a tub and like, you know, whatever, you take your bath and then you flip the thing to like let the water go out. It feels like it takes forever.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm always surprised by how slow water goes down when it's just like going through this little pipe. Eight inches a minute. And this is like this, what did I say? Like almost 4 billion gallons of water.
Oh
so this
gosh.
Thing is just like a bat out of hell flying.
Imagine looking over and seeing that come at you.
Oh yeah. Oh, you're not gonna have to imagine. I'm gonna explain what people experienced.
Oh, okay.
So it comes barreling down. And it's filled with all this debris.
Oh,
and
right.
It's not coming down like sort of smoothly. It's filled with all this different stuff. And the waves are sort of like cresting and breaking on itself. And it's sort of doing this like loop-de-loopy spinny thing. At times it gets up to 40 feet high.
I'm sorry. I'm not laughing because it's funny.
No, this is all going to be laughter from just extreme discomfort.
This is insane.
I get it. Yeah, it gets insane. So first it hits South Fork, which is where Park had gone, remember, with Shadow Fax to warn him to send the telegraph. Thankfully, the people in South Fork more or less took the warning seriously. Not every single person, but a lot of them basically just like went to higher ground and got the hell out of there. A couple of people didn't make it, unfortunately, but the majority of the town was okay. And it just plows through it. And what does it do? It takes trees, houses, everything. This whole thing houses. Now is part of this. Yeah, whole houses. This thing is now, these are all part of this tsunami that's coming down. And so it just straight, it's almost like a train just blowing through it, right? And it keeps going and until it reaches the Kanama Viaduct, which was a railroad bridge about 75 feet high. And this thing's a viaduct, so it's got like these arches, right? So it just plows into that.
Takes out the arches, right?
So no, for a second, the arches actually stop the water because it acts as like a blocker. Because there's, think about it. So there's water, there's all this debris within the water, and then it all just gets sort of log jammed into the arches. And for a second, it's like, okay, phew, cool. Like this thing slowed down. But actually, no, that's not what happens. What it does is that it functions kind of like, almost like, you know, when we had toy cars where you'd pull them back and then let them go.
Oh, no.
It's like what it does is like it increases the velocity of everything.
Okay.
And at the center of this arch with all the debris, it turns into like this Katamari ball from hell. So it's now collecting like houses and trees and boulders, and it just becomes like this giant insane ball of death. And eventually, it's probably about like 5 to 7 minutes that it's chilling there. It just explodes.
Oh no!
Yeah, it explodes. The entire
archway
is gone.
I don't want to die this way.
I absolutely don't want to die this way.
I don't want to be buried in water and debris, putting it out there.
So it basically just adds more force to it because it had to hold back for a minute, and it just boom explodes. So now the ball has this like concentrated it's got like the center of gravity of nonsense that it's grabbing. Again, remember Katamari. Did you ever play Katamari?
No.
Oh, okay. But are you familiar with the game? It's the one where you're like the alien rolling up the ball and it just gathers a bunch of different stuff.
Yeah.
It's like this magnetic ball. It's really fun. It's a fantastic game. So this is like Katamari, but horrific.
Death.
And death. And it bursts. And so it keeps going down. And it hits a few villages on its way down, right? So remember, Johnstown is the biggest one, but there's a couple of little villages, a couple of little towns. It takes out this train. So at one point, there's like a train yard, and some train conductor is like, oh shit, what is going on? There's like, he sees the tsunami. So he like slams the train into reverse, and he's like, honk, honk, like warn people. But nope, that thing just gets swept into it. Everybody dies. Everybody's in the flood. Everybody's trapped in it. Now it has train parts. It's got like train cars. It's got like train tracks.
Okay.
And it keeps going. And the last stop before it gets to Johnstown is, remember the Cambria Iron Company, the steel mill?
Oh, yeah. More debris.
It hits the steel mill. And of course, the steel mill has all kinds of crazy steel-based stuff that they're making. But this is truly where it gets horrific. Guess what else they're making in the area? Guess what else they're making there at the time?
What?
Miles and miles and miles of barbed wire.
No! No! Are you serious?
I swear to God.
This is a cartoon.
Yes, yes.
It's like they hit the Acme company and there's like bombs and TNT.
Literally, yeah. It's straight up. Yeah. This is straight up like an old Chuck Jones cartoon. So it hits the steel mill company and all this debris is now covered in barbed wire. Barbed wire.
Okay.
So then there's like trees, boulders, railroad tracks, train cars, a train conductor, dead bodies, houses, all wrapped in barbed wire, going at 40 miles an hour
Man's
towards
ego.
A town of 30,000 people.
Wow.
I mean, I couldn't write this in terms of how horrific this is.
No.
And so It takes about an hour from the time the dam breaks to get down to the to Jonestown. So at around Johnstown. 4 p.m., I'm sorry, Johnstown. Yes, I keep screwing this up. At around 4 p.m., it hits Johnstown. And, you know, I could get into all, believe me, I read a lot about this. I don't really want to get into sort of like how horrific it is when it hits them.
Yeah.
Because it's just not fun. It's just not fun. It's just, it's basically like whatever your imagination is thinking, it's that bad, but probably worse. And the entire town is just gone within about 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Yeah. And don't forget, people are caught off guard. They're all like, there was a different flood. Some of them are trapped in their houses. Some of them are just trying to like, they're like, what? So most people are just like, they turn their head to see like what's going on and then they're gone. Drowning, getting crushed by houses. So many of them get caught in barbed wire. It's just horrific.
I hate this.
Yeah, it's so awful. It's so awful. And the water just keeps going crashing down and it hits these hills that surround the town. So basically there's one swipe where it comes and it knocks everything out. It like basically clears most of the town, but some of this town is still standing. And then the water hits like the hills that are around the town and it just bounces back.
No.
And then it does like a second pass, a backward surge.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's so bad.
No, I try not to laugh because that's all I can do right now.
No, I understand. Like I said, when I was reading this, it's not the laughter at the death. It's the laughter from the extreme discomfort at how horrific it is. And we don't know how else to react to it. Yeah.
The fact that it's like a cartoon.
Mm-hmm. And eventually it hits the stone railway bridge that's at the end of town, which is another kind of like arched railway bridge that has trains go over it. Okay. And that acts as another blocker. But thankfully, that actually manages to split it into like three different streams.
Good.
Which unfortunately spreads it across and just and like floods three different parts of the town. But at least like the main gigantic, you know, tsunami is broken up.
Right.
Much like how Steve Jobs says, right? You're like, oh, and one more thing.
Okay.
Remember the Katamari ball, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Katamari ball of debris, and at this point, barbed wire, dead bodies, houses, all that stuff.
You're the Steve Jobs of podcasting, by the way.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll wear
my mock turtleneck next time. Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, so that debris ball has gotten lodged into this bridge. It stopped, thankfully. But the last stop that it hit was all the people in Johnstown, right?
Oh, okay.
No. I don't doubt that some orphanage got ruined. So it hit the people of Johnstown. Don't forget, the people of Johnstown have been trapped in their houses for the past day or so because of the floods. And it's cold. So what does that mean? They all had open flame furnaces on, heaters, stoves, and lamps. They were all running. So you can see where this is going.
Yeah.
So this pile of debris with trees and houses and all this wood meets all these furnaces and heaters and stoves and lamps. And what do you got? You got a burning inferno wrapped in barbed wire. Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
How did it get worse? How? That's insane.
The fire rages for almost 3 days straight.
What?
Yeah, it's a 3-day fire. And separate from all the deaths that happened, 80 people just died from the fires. Not even from the flood, but just from people who were like, had somehow managed to like avoid the flood part of it, all caught fire
like,
and died.
Nope.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I made it. Done. Dead.
Wow.
Thankfully, that's the end of that sort of horrific, awful death part.
Wasn't too bad.
Yeah, right? Very low key. So the town's done. And on June 1st, that's when the town officially begins the recovery process. So the final death toll, including the fire and everything, was 2,209 people.
That's so many. How many were in the town again?
Total, I think it was like somewhere between like 20 to 30,000 people were in the town.
Okay. Wow, that's like 2% of the population. Well,
yeah.
Wow.
Something like that. Yeah.
I'm going to pretend like
I know. I think it was 10%, but 99 entire families are wiped out.
No.
Meaning like mom, dad, children, entire lineage, like bloodlines just gone, gone.
Wow.
Everybody in the town, every single person in the town had at least one person that died. So nobody was unaffected. Every single person had somebody in their lives that they lost.
Oh, sad.
Bodies turned up as far as 600 miles away in Cincinnati.
What?
Yeah. Because of the flood, because the water was just like, and were found as late as 1911.
What? So this is like 20 years.
Yeah, 20 years later.
We got another one, boss.
That was the force of this thing. Yeah, they're like, And, you know, there's no railways, there's no roads, there's no food. And perhaps most tragically ironic, there's no water because everything's been, you know, soiled by all this insane dirt and feces and dead bodies and dead animals. Like, they can't even drink water. It's so bad. It's so bad.
That made me want to puke. The combination.
It's gross.
So what do they do?
Here's the part that's probably the worst for the club. There's no record of what happened to all the fish that they tried so hard to save. So it's presumable that they all died as well, unfortunately.
How did it get you worse?
Very quickly, though, help starts to pour in. Everybody in America is like, basically like us, they're traumatized. They're like, they can't even like wrap their heads around how insane this is.
They're all looking at the dams and in their towns being like,
They're like, what?
Maybe we should do something.
Yeah. There's this huge relief effort. They fix the railways as quickly as they can so they can start bringing in food and water and support. Volunteers just start pouring in.
Oh.
Fun fact, including Clara Burton of the American Red Cross.
Really?
So she had just founded the Red Cross the American wing of the Red Cross like a couple years earlier.
Oh, she's awesome.
It had been sort of smaller. So this actually marks like the first significant disaster that Clara Burton and the Red Cross had responded to.
Whoa.
And sort of cements them as the big force that they went on to be known for.
Wow.
This was it. This is like their coming out party, kind of. Clara Burton, she remained there specifically for about 5 months working nonstop herself.
She's amazing. I have a tab open about her because I was thinking
of doing
it.
I was going to say, that would be an interesting one to go. Yeah, I'd be interested in knowing more about
it's on my short
like, her
list.
Whole life. Maybe that's one that can be a derivative of this.
Maybe.
And once the final flood water had dissipated and gone, they were left with about 30 acres of debris. And some of it went up to 70 feet tall.
No.
And remember, this isn't just debris that they can, first of all, they don't have like excavators and like construction work stuff that they could just come and like get rid of it. And it's all like trees and like broken houses, all covered in barbed wire. Not like stuff that you could, it's so bad. They can't just go pick it out. So one of the things they had to do was hire like a demolitions expert to clear some of these gigantic piles because it was so unsafe.
Wow.
It took them months and months and months to get rid of just the debris. Forget the fact that it took them how long it took them to actually like rebuild the town.
Well, they rebuilt then.
And people around the world were moved by the tragedy and they collectively sent millions of dollars in donations. Their hearts opened up.
Aww.
You know, everyone's kind of rallying together. They're doing the best that they can. You know who didn't really do that? Didn't really get too into the support thing?
Who? Rudy Giuliani.
Rudy Giuliani, he was too busy eating pizza.
Yeah.
The wealthy club owners.
Oh.
The members of the club, some of the richest human beings on the planet.
What, they just like disappeared, left?
They donated like a couple thousand dollars and like 1,000 blankets.
Oh.
And that's it. They might as well have been tossing like rolls of paper towels at them, essentially. They're just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Yeah. I didn't get rich by complaining. I got rich by having my
being
daddy
born.
Do it and exploiting people. Yeah, by being bored.
By being a Rockefeller. That's horrible.
It's horrific. Yeah, it's
really glad
horrific
the rich
is the word I just keep
changed.
Coming back to. Yeah.
I'm so glad they learned from that lesson. They learned their lesson.
So naturally, but thankfully, public opinion is like, oh no, these people need to die. Like, these people are awful. People are pissed.
But yeah,
you know, they can't control it the way that they could, like, let's say, like, you know, maybe 50 years later when they start buying up newspapers and stuff.
Right.
And calls for justice against the South Fork Hunting and Fishing Club get like crazy. People are like, they start to rally around each other because they're like, these people are clearly victims of the negligence of this club.
Yeah.
And the press is there and they're just writing all these reports about Ruff. Remember, Ruff was the guy was the one who bought the club. He's actually, remember, from the time that he bought the club and made all these changes to the time this flood happens, he's since passed away. He died, like, I think about 2 years before this.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Because he's an older guy. So he's not even there to be, you know, liable for it or culpable. But everybody is like, dude, this is clearly, like, this is obvious that what happened here. Everybody sort of understands it. And like I said, the press is doing all these reports. Everyone's like, Ruff screwed this up. And all these locals who lived in Johnstown, remember, like I said, so like nobody was actually, like very few people were members of that club because they couldn't afford it.
Right.
And they were sort of like looked down upon from this like ivory tower, like douche fest from up there. So they're like, yeah, we'll talk to anybody. We don't care. Like,
we
screw
hate
those
people.
Guys. It was like, yeah, it was like war. And public sentiment is like united. Like, everyone hates the club. Everyone hates Ruff. Everyone hates these people. And it's, again, it didn't help them that the club is basically like, we'll give you like $1,000 and some blankets. So it's like people are unified.
Insulting.
Heads need to roll. Yeah. And all the people in the town, a lot of people in the town start filing lawsuits. So they're like, we need to bond together and like basically hold these people responsible and sue them. And because they've lost everything, they have nothing.
Right.
They have nothing left. Nothing is there. So many people, at least one person died, in some cases everybody in their family. So heads need to roll. Meanwhile, the American Society of Civil Engineers is like, we need to investigate, because that's like the scientific body that's going to come in and sort of and write a paper that's going to prove what happened, why what happened, because, you know, they want to help out. And they commission a report. And they send like their top dudes. Like, these are some of like the top minds of, you know, civil engineering and like dam people and like hydrologists and all this stuff. Like, these are like the guys who know what's up. And they write this report, and the report concluded that, amongst other things, to save money, the state of Pennsylvania failed to include a masonry heart wall in the middle of the dam. So what that means is that their M&M didn't have a peanut center.
So dumb. Wow.
They didn't put the peanut in there.
Man.
They scrimped on that.
And
they didn't put the damn peanut in. It's a damn mess. Had they put that in there, it would have provided a vertical structural support for earth and riprap to be built around. Riprap is like bigger rocks that they put on the outside wall. It's like a lining. Riprap is what it's called. Yeah.
It sounds like an old white lady trying to remember what rap is called.
Riprap. This hip hop and riprap. The ASCE also reported that the South Fork Hunting and Fishing Club were also at fault because of the unprofessional quality of the work it commissioned, which, quote, materially diminished the security of the dam.
Well, yeah.
So everyone's like, great. Like, shit's going to go down, right?
No, it went down?
It's not. No, it didn't go down.
Nothing happened?
Despite those findings, the report came to the conclusion that the dam would have eventually failed on its own despite the breadth of unprofessional work the club had undertaken.
Who paid for that?
Quote.
Somebody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who was it? For
people who aren't watching the video, I'm tapping my nose.
He is tapping it.
Quote, the breach occurred a little earlier in the day on account of the changes, but disaster would have happened either way, given a storm of appropriate size, just like the one that rolled through central Pennsylvania on May 31st, 1889. And everybody's like, dude, excuse me, what? No. False, incorrect, fake news.
Fake news.
Doesn't make any sense. And so when the report failed to assign fault for the dam breaking, it shielded the state of Pennsylvania and the South Fork Hunting and Fishing Club against lawsuits.
What?
So flood survivors never received compensation for the tragedy. Nobody got money. Nothing happened. They just got away with it.
I'm speechless.
Yeah. So terrible. And sadly, that's where their story sort of just ends.
Huh.
There's like, okay. That's it. There's no like, people didn't come in and like fix it. They just were like, sorry, eat shit. Like, half your family's dead, whatever.
Again, I'm so glad we've learned, you know?
Yeah. Well, there are a couple of fun postscripts to this story.
Yeah, fun. Okay.
Okay, so everyone's pissed about this. Like I said, public opinion is very much in favor of this. So as word of this justice and spread, it led to the push for strict liability laws.
Oh, good.
I was going to go down. I decided that like I had spent way too much time and way too many tabs on this, so I wasn't going to try and understand the law.
Yeah, no.
To the extent that I could, because I was like, I've already become a damn expert. I can't be a law expert as well. But the short version of it is strict liability laws exist when a defendant is liable for committing an action regardless of what his or slash her intent or mental state was when committing the action. So basically, up until that point, if they couldn't prove you had deliberately screwed up, like in an email or something, they couldn't charge you with anything. So In this case, regardless of whether or not the club had like deliberately like known and were making a mistake and screwing it up, they couldn't charge them with, they couldn't like hold them liable. But
right.
Essentially laws changed after that where they were like, it doesn't matter, you own that dam.
Right.
And whether or not like you think you're doing a good job, you are liable for this and you will have to pay out even if you...
The second you bought it.
Exactly, yeah, because it's yours. So basically overall throughout the land, that happened as a result, or I shouldn't say like directly, but like basically it inspired everybody to be like, we need, these laws don't work. Like, this is terrible. This is horrific.
Good. So
people kind of rallied together. I couldn't, again, I didn't really want to go too far into it, but there might be some sort of like Supreme Court case or something, but I couldn't find it just within my sort of cursory understanding of this.
Yeah.
A fun little story is the official, there's two more little postscripts. The official number of deaths had been 2,209, right?
Yeah.
But in the year 1900, a man named Leroy Temple came to visit his old friend in Johnstown.
Okay.
So it's about 10 years later. He came from Beverly, Massachusetts. This was a guy who used to live there. He was caught in the debris, carried all the way down to the Stone Bridge, which is where the enormous fields of debris were.
Yeah.
And he had managed to grab a suspended rail and pulled himself out of the debris. And he was badly injured, but recovered enough in several weeks. And was when train travel was established, he just was like, cool.
He just
so
left?
He took his family and moved. He took his family and moved to Beverly, Massachusetts. But I guess nobody really knew.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So he worked as a teamster and a furniture mover until his death in 1913. So the official death count
went
was
down?
Lowered to 2,208. Because Leroy Temple did survive and he came back to visit.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah. That's like those people who went like purposefully disappeared after 9/11.
Oh, I don't know much about that.
Oh, I'll save that then.
Okay.
People who use disasters, who are like on the verge of ditching their life, and then a disaster happens, and they're like, yeah, this is it.
Yeah. Time to go start a family two towns over.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. I mean, not cool. That was horrible.
Not cool. No, I mean, like, that was like a nice little thing for him. But
yeah.
Lastly, this is the last point I'll make. So Neil Coleman is a professor in the Department of Energy and Earth Resources at the University of Pittsburgh in Johnstown. This dude grew up there.
Whoa.
This is now, by the way. This is modern times.
Okay.
So he learned of the flood growing up in Pennsylvania. It's a thing that people all talk about and they all know about. And he's got extensive hydrological experience as a geophysicist and intuitively understands the entire area around the Conemaugh River and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was like, listen, this 1891 ASCE report is like very suspect to me. This does not add up. I don't understand what this deal is. So the investigating committee didn't acknowledge, for example, that they had lowered the crest of the dam. Remember, like to make it for carriages. And he was like, these would have been some of the top minds in civil engineering at the time. Why would they not have that in there? And so he's basically like, so the quote he says is, seeing the report made by some of the most prominent engineers of the day and the things they overlooked made no sense. So he began to study the hydrology of the disaster in an attempt to comprehend how they came to the conclusions. So he assembles like So Coleman, he assembles like this Ocean's 11 of like dam and hydrologist nerds.
Awesome.
And it's really cool actually. And like he conducts an on the ground research of the remains of the dam. They like compile newspaper articles, help wanted ads, worker and survivor testimonies, and even the journals of the original builders. And they sort of try to reconstruct all the conditions that the of the dam on the day that it collapsed. And again, there's a bunch of stuff that people have written about this. I do not understand it. But long story short, they did a bunch of crazy smart nerd tests.
Nice, nice.
I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean that in like a, I don't understand what you guys are talking about, but I'm glad that you people exist and are doing this way.
So I can draw my little comics in a world that won't collapse.
Right, so I don't die when I drive over a dam or get swallowed by a flood. And the team published their research in 2013 and 2016 in a series of papers. So ultimately, as opposed to the ASCE's conclusions published in 1891, Coleman and company found the dam would have survived hydrologically had it not been for the repairs commissioned by the club. So they go on to say, even if extremely high lake inflows had continued unabated, overtopping of the dam at its original design height would have been averted for around 14 hours. In the absence of alternate failure mechanisms such as piping, the dam would have been preserved because lake inflows would have substantially diminished during the afternoon and evening. So this is the crazy part. Their calculations found that adding 3 feet to the dam's crest, basically bring on the edge of the bathtub, basically bringing it to the original height before the club built the carriage paths across it, would have allowed it to store an additional 1.6 million square meters of water without overtopping.
Wow.
So, yeah. So basically, the carriage is what ruined it, the carriage path.
So
all the other
stupid stuff
was screwed up too. It didn't help, but like that was sort of like the icing on the cake.
Just we want a carriage road.
Yeah, and so he starts looking at it, and he's like looking at the paper, and he's just like, you know, I don't doubt that the investigators carried out the work using the best methods available at the time, but the team's research started to show rounds of anonymous edits and repeated delays in publication that seemed to minimize the club's responsibility and report the findings to the public only after some of the anger about the disaster had subsided. So he's like, long story short, the report has parts that don't look consistent.
Doctored.
And there's reports. Yeah. And it also kept getting delayed, potentially because they thought that like public opinion would sort of like, you know, the public outrage would die down and would subside.
It didn't.
And of course, the team noted that the social connections between members of the ASCE and the South Fork Club likely influenced the conclusions the commission had reached. So the fact that it contains, and this is his last quote, he says, the fact that it contains so many important omissions tells me that someone edited stuff out of this report.
Wow.
All I can go by is the science and engineering in the report, and the things that are missing just don't make sense.
I wonder who did.
Coincidence? I think not.
Definitely not. So somebody, that's horrible. I think that probably happened all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very much. It happens a lot. But they can scientifically prove that they're like, yeah, no, this is a bunch of bullshit. Like, that was clearly the reason for it.
Wow. Well, that's a nice, like, closure for that, though. At least we have some answer of like, oh, yeah.
We have some answers, yeah.
These people should not have made a road where they shouldn't have made a road.
And Unbelievable.
Shouldn't have put a bunch of fish in there, even though the fish are cute.
Yeah.
Which was the reason,
and remember,
right?
it was not, none of this is like, oh, it's different times and they didn't know. It's like, no, they knew better.
They knew better.
They knew better. They were warned. People told them about it. The people who worked at the club told them about it. The people who were like members of somebody from the club, that guy, remember Neckbeard, was like, dude, this is a bad idea. They just didn't give a shit.
Wow. No. I feel like I was taken on a big ride. I say that every episode, but this time I mean it. I'm like tired.
With covered in barbed wire. And like, yeah, I'm sorry. I should have split this probably into like two more, but I was like, I need to get this off my chest because there's too much stuff.
This will just be an extra long episode. That's okay.
Yeah, I went very crazy with this one. But thank you for, I'm so glad to dump this out of my brain and just not have to think about it anymore, because that was so much I had to research.
I can't believe I've never heard about this.
I was surprised too. I was like, I'm like, I haven't heard much about this within, I mean, there's other people who have like, there's YouTube videos and there's like a couple of podcasts, but like of the mainstreamy kind of stuff that we both listen to or are aware of, there hadn't really been something that was substantial about it. I was surprised.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Right.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm like, I like, yeah, the adrenaline was like there and now I'm like, deflated.
Hey there, this is Adreed Kaveh, here to give that poor little guy host Kaveh a break. Hannah and I would like to ask you for help by going to nebula.tv/500opentabs and signing up for Nebula, where they have exclusives like Why Our TVs Wanted to Kill Us in 90s Movies by Tech Alter. Ever notice that 90s movies were obsessed with evil media? Shows plunging societies into ruin, video games that trap and torture players, and VHS tapes that kill anyone that watches them? What caused this sudden obsession? These kinds of wonderful video essays never cease to amaze me. I had to get a master's and go countless thousands of dollars into debt. But you kids now? You can get an annual subscription to Nebula that gives you the same insights for the cost of a carton of eggs, at the time of this recording, probably. You can find this video and dozens of other high production originals on Nebula, a video streaming platform built by and for creators. And along with videos and podcasts, you can now learn new skills in Nebula's fully produced classes. Go to nebula.tv/500opentabs and get 40% off an annual subscription. By signing up, you can support other creators like Maggie Mayfish, Princess Weeks, and many more. Remember, sign up at nebula.tv/500opentabs. Otherwise, Hannah and I will assume you hate us and will cry, much like host Kaveh is doing right now, from not being allowed to talk for a whole 2 minutes. Yes. Anyway, that's my tab. If you want to, I know you said you wanted to do a shorter one just because I had said that I would probably go over on this one. I apologize. But
yeah, I've got a short little one. My tab is, very different, extremely different.
Sure.
Have you ever heard of the alphabet?
Which one?
Any of them.
Any of them. Yes, I've heard. I'm familiar with the concept.
That's what I'm talking about today. The alphabet. So
okay.
So the original tab was this thing from Mental Floss about these 10 letters that used to exist in the English alphabet that we just ditched along the way.
Oh.
So yeah, there used to be like,
36 letters in the alphabet altogether?
Well, give and take. I'll tell you.
Okay.
Sorry, I gotta take a deep breath after that damn story.
Sorry.
Damn. Okay, that was damn rough. Get it? Just please put me in the ground. I'm tired.
We can bury you in the ground and then have a bunch of water flow over it.
Oh. That'd be beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah, so in the beginning of alphabets, this goes all the way back to it's like 2000 BC when we first start to see like an actual alphabet emerge. Before that, it was like hieroglyphics and like the Phoenician script. So more picture based. But like ancient Jewish people moved to Egypt by force or because they wanted to work there. And they were like, what the heck is this hieroglyphic stuff? This is so complicated. Mm-hmm. If we're gonna work here, we have to make this better. And so they pretty much simplified hieroglyphics into like what they call a proto-Sinaitic. They pretty much simplified the hieroglyphics to make it work because they were like, this is stupid, and they were like, this takes so much time, and I'm sick of it. So
it's not efficient.
Not at all, because it was like Egyptians would like it was like an art form almost. You know, like we're going to make this picture that's also a story. And anyway, so after that, throughout the years, I'm just gonna kind of glaze over this because this is not what I wanted to talk about, but we do need some background on it.
Okay.
So it changes to archaic Greek, and that's in like 750 BC. So this was like 1500 years of this alphabet that the ancient Jews created. And this is when the letter Y starts appearing, what looks like the letter Y. So there wasn't a letter Y. I know. Okay, here's the crazy thing. So I have this chart. I'll post it. But these original, the original proto Semitic letters are incredible. Mm-hmm. Like the letter A used to be like a bull with horns. And slowly over time, it just flipped over. And that's why you have those 2 points on the A. They were horns on the bull. Yeah.
Also, it's kind of funny that they did a bull with horns after like ragging on the Egyptians for having be like, your stuff's too picture based. We need to have a bull with horns because that's clearly more of a letter.
They took the original one and were like, we're just going to keep the bull. So, and all of these are very similar.
Very pro-bull.
So you can see the H. The original H looks like kind of like a gate or a fence because the Semitic word for fence or gate started with an H, the H sound. So they were going based on that. So over the years, then it switched to, you know, the ancient Greek. And then it went to archaic Latin. And this is where you start seeing a few more letters. And then they also dropped some of the Greek letters because they were like, these don't make sense. Then we go to the Roman alphabet. And this is in the first century. So kind of the height of the Roman Empire. And this is mostly what we have today. So the alphabet we have today has kind of not really changed in 1,000 or 2,000 years. Too much. Yeah. So it only had 23 letters. And this is where Y and Z kind of start to get all weird. They add Z. And then the Y, do you remember the original Y that was up there? They're like, it starts looking like a V. And so that becomes a V.
Oh, okay. Was the V sound there?
Yes, that's how they pronounced it. Okay. It looked like a Y, but it was pronounced like a V. Linguists, bear with me.
No, I'm here.
Then
I'm into it.
Then we go to the modern Latin script. And that is, they add the J, the Y becomes three other letters, U, V, W.
Okay.
And U-V-W. It looks...
Okay.
And this is around the same time. So now, here's where it gets closer to where I wanted to talk about. We hop the channel from the continental Europe to England. We're back. Surprise.
England!
I don't know anything about this place. And at this time, England was called something along the lines of Britannia, various, all these different Celtic words that ended up sounding like Britannia or Britain. And the Romans invade, and they occupy England for like 500 years. And so they bring their alphabet with them. And
Interesting. Right. So then that's where it starts to merge.
After the Romans leave, this is so simplified. After the Romans leave in the 400s, Anglo-Saxons, who are Germanic from the mainland, have started to move into England and start take over. And they have their own runic alphabet. So two alphabets. We got runes from the Germanic people, and we've got the Latin alphabet. And they're merging.
How is anyone even talking to each other at this point?
No one's writing.
How is anyone communicating?
I
guess that's true, right?
Well, they kind of have this weird blend. So it's interesting to go, because you can see them use both alphabets in one singular document because of the blending of the cultures. And at this point in 400 AD, they show up. And these Anglo-Saxons are like, Celts, get away from me. And they start pushing all the Celts into Wales and Cornwall and Scotland, which is where they remain today. So their alphabet was called Futhorc.
The Celtic alphabet was called Futhorc?
No, I'm hopping all around. The Germanic, Anglo-Saxon.
That one's called,
Futhorc. The Celts didn't really write things down. And if they did, they don't survive. You know how much history I'm not talking about right now? And it is taking everything in me. No, this will
go on some tangents if you need.
All right. I might. Okay, so this Futhorc runic alphabet. Over the next 500 years, Latin and Futhorc start to kind of merge. And
they're attracted to each other.
But no one really knows.
They fall in love.
They run away. They defy their parents.
Oh, it's forbidden.
They defy their parents. And they leave and they commit suicide together. Nope. Why is it always death with me? Man,
where are those languages buried, Hannah? That's what I want to know. Where are their graves?
Dig them up. Okay. So Futhorc and Latin start to combine, and no one really knows why or how they combined, but they did. To end up, now we're in 1000 AD. and the Latin alphabet has won out. So we've got all the Latin stuff, but there were these leftover letters from the Futhark alphabet that were just included because they had made sounds that Latin didn't really have letters for.
They're like, so now, why not just hold on to it?
Well, yeah, but so now we have these the 10 or so letters that were in the alphabet and then slowly kind of faded because of the printing press and movable type.
Okay. Interesting. So,
these letters existed in writing, but when movable type came over from Belgium, they were like, we don't have that letter. And so that's when they kind of started dropping it and just using Latin ones.
Literally the language changes just because.
Yes.
That's crazy. That's logistics.
Crazy. Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So the first letter I'm going to talk about is F. And F? It sounds like you're saying S, but with a lisp. F.
With a lisp. Okay. F.
And it is like a D with a little line through the stick part of the D. I'm okay. A linguist.
I got you. And no, it's like a cross with like a half circle on it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And they don't really know where this came from. They think it was a modified Roman letter or modified from Irish writing, that old Ogham script. But no one really knows. And it was also used. Sometimes they would use it for the shorthand for the word the. So
okay.
If you see it sometimes, it just stands for the word the.
The. I mean, if it's F.
And it's a...
F.
It's a harder TH, yeah. So it's not like a th. It's like a th.
Th.
Yeah. F.
This has turned into an ASMR podcast.
Yeah. Th. So this letter... It's disgusting. Why am I so grossed out by that? That gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Fine, don't subscribe to my ASMR YouTube channel. You're not invited.
Fine. Yeah. I will only subscribe if you eat crab legs like that one lady. Have you watched her?
That someone eats? No, I don't actually watch ASMR videos.
I don't watch it either, but the internet gives it to me.
Right. Crab legs?
So I watch some lady just slurping meat out of crab legs.
Ew!
It's horrible. I don't get ASMR. I don't get the little tingly.
I don't
want to
hear people eat ever.
Oh, me either.
Hear people eat ever.
It enrages
ever,
me
ever.
To the point of like I want to commit a crime. Oh, you got that too,
yes.
Huh?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah. Anyway, so F, we have F, which is like F, a D with a line. F is a weird one because it quickly dies out once this other letter called thorn is also
thorn.
There. Thorn. So thorn looks like a P, but if the line of the P keeps going. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it looks like a little thorn coming out of a line.
So it's like a D where like the roots grow out and then the top part of it grows as well.
Yes. It's like a lowercase P.
This is a fun game. I like doing this.
It's
trying to describe
P,
letters.
But the roots keep going. Yeah. So this letter also made the sound F. So
why would you have two of them that made the same sound?
Right. So
yeah,
they,
redundant.
That's why they were like, where did original
sounds
F...
like the Belgians were like, yeah, no, this is actually like not as efficient.
They
like,
were like, you guys are stupid.
They were consultants. Yeah.
Which is funny because the Futhark alphabet originally came from around that region in the Germanic area. Not Belgium, but anyway.
Sure.
So thorn is the oldest one. So this has been around. This is one of the oldest letters of the Futhark alphabet and mm-hmm. also the English alphabet. So it actually ended up winning out. So it was like, get out of here, F. I'm F now.
Get out of here.
I'm the F now. So this letter stuck around longer than most of the old English ones. We got rid of this one last. And this was when movable type came. And so instead, they were like, it makes an S now sound. So now we're just going to use TH. And so that's the sound TH comes from. It used to be its own letter. Over the years, thorn had started to look a lot like the letter Y through all the different script changes. And that's a whole different thing. And so the movable type people are like, this is stupid. It looks like a Y. It looks like a P. We're not going to do this. But here's a fun fact about thorn is that have you ever seen things named like ye old shop or like
Yeah, with the PPE.
Yeah, but the ye part. So
okay,
that's Thorn. It was supposed to be the old shop. Because that, right? That Y.
Oh my God, mind blown.
I know. That Y was originally the P that got turned and morphed into this like weird cursive Y.
Oh my
movable
God.
Movable type came around.
That's
like,
why it's
this
ye
looks,
old shop.
Yes. It's supposed to be the old shop. I know. And so when movable type came, they were like, this kind of looks like that letter. So they put a Y there.
Oh my God.
I know, right?
That's
and this
so
is why
strange.
When the King James Bible was translated, it's full of ye. When it should just be have the. I know you love
oh
the
my
Bible.
God.
I know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of it that's like,
so
yeah.
Ye as like a phrase isn't even like a thing, really. It just
is,
was like a.
If it's about a
it
person.
It is also.
So like,
yeah.
Hear ye. That's like, hear you.
It's not
you
hear the.
No, but like
hear
in the Bible,
the.
In the Bible where a verse starts with ye, it's supposed to be the.
Holy crap.
I know. It like changes everything.
That's so bizarre. Yeah. Language literally changes because of Belgian typesetters who did not want to
who were
deal
like,
with
we're
anything.
Not doing this.
Yeah.
So that's Thorn. I love Thorn. And Icelandic still uses Thorn. It's the only language today still around that uses Thorn regularly.
Okay.
So the next one is Win. And
Win.
This one also kind of looks like a P.
Okay.
Like a cursive P.
I'm starting to understand, like,
yeah,
you know, the Belgians.
Like,
I feel
get
like.
Get out.
Yeah.
But the serifs are kind of slanted. Anyway, this is the W sound. So Latin, there was no W sound. And when they wanted to make the W sound, they would just put two U's next to each other, which ended up becoming the W.
Merging together, yeah.
Which is like in Spanish, W is doble U, and most languages, it ends up being.
I mean, it's
just,
literally, the word is literally W.
Yep. W.
Or I mean, the letter is referred to as W. Yes. That makes sense.
So before that combined, there was win. And win, it makes the long oo sound. So yeah, it just ended up winning out because it looks like a P. The W ends up beating it because it just looked too much like a P. Okay, here's the next one. Number four, Joch.
Yeah. Joch.
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 And it's
Joch.
It eventually becomes the GH sound.
Yeah, I was going to say, Joch, that sounds like when I write Farce English.
Farce
like when you try to write Farce English is like when you write Farsi out in English characters, like when I'm texting like my mom or something.
Oh, and you use GH?
We use GH for like a re and then a KH for like a che.
Oh, interesting. Because it's very similar to this, that like guttural kind of back of the throat sound. But, and it survives in a lot of language. I'm going to go down my Celtic wormhole.
I was actually going to ask too. It's like, it's that I don't hear that sound is always confusing for people when they speak English. Like, I'm sorry, when they're like English speakers, when they're trying to read stuff that has like GH or the KH.
It's a hard, we don't really have it in English.
But it's still, like, but you're saying it did used to exist within the sort of,
Old
on
English,
the continent. It's interesting. Yeah.
Old English had this. And so, I mean, I don't speak it very well anymore, but I used to speak Welsh pretty fluently. And there, the word for red, for example, is goch or coch.
Goch.
Goch or coch, yeah. And so that sound is in Welsh. That sound is in Scottish. Yeah, say
goch,
it, say
fun
it.
Fact. In Farsi, goch, which out the goch, it means like shit.
Are you serious?
Goch. Yeah, goch.
Whoa,
but
goch.
No, just the G-O-H would be.
Goch. I love that.
Yeah,
there's
but
a
I could
castle.
Just be like goch. Yeah.
Goch.
Goch.
Anyway.
Goch is red.
Yes, it's red. And it's in Scottish where you see the word for loch, like a lake, like Loch Ness.
Oh, like Loch Ness.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be Loch Ness, though?
It's Loch Ness, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. Loch Ness.
Yeah. Yes. So in Celtic languages, this yoch still exists a lot. But in English, because English has changed so much, it became GH. But, oh, also, Yoch looks like a three.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like the number three. So
it would just be like...
And this one, Yoch shows up in the Middle Ages, the Middle English period, sorry, not Middle Ages, the 1400s, which is weirdly relatively late. And then they ditched it because, of course, the typists and printers were like, this is a three. We're not printing this.
And we're not so they redoing replaced it this. With
GH. But then if you look back at Middle English, the word for knight, it used to be pronounced nicht. So the GH, so I'm not pronouncing
been,
that right.
It would have been the three. So it would have been K-N-I, 3-T. So,
yes, that would have been the word for knight. Or
so the GH in knight needs to be a re sound, not yes. a... Not but, like a silent, like night, like N-I-G-H-T.
It's, right, it's and it became G, silent a... because that's just how English evolved. So and
oh, that's so weird. Yeah. I've always wondered that because I was like, this doesn't make sense. Because again, like when I write out the first English, it's like we always do the G-H and K-H. That's not official, by the way. That's just sort of like its own thing that's developed when you try and translate a non-English, or sorry, a non-like Western alphabetic language into English.
Right, you kind of have to fudge it a little bit sometimes. We're like, this yeah. is kind of close, but...
Yeah, but no, because to me, I would read like night as like nacht. Nacht.
Yeah, that's how it
makes
was
much more sense to me.
Closer to being pronounced that way. So in Old English,
so strange.
In Middle English, they would, well, the same with the word house. H-O-U-S doesn't make any sense. It used to be pronounced hus.
Hus, as I say, yeah.
Yeah, like hus, like housewife used to be like huswift or something.
Who's Swift?
Some interesting. I can't remember. I'm don't
Who's
quote
Swift?
Me on that.
Your hair has taken up too much of the drain.
You're bringing the hair into this again. I'm guilty of that. My hair is all over the place. Anyway,
mine
so,
is too, but for different reasons.
So this GH used to be. Oh, just migrating down.
Yeah, it's migrating down to my back. That's what I always say.
It's got to go somewhere.
Gotta go somewhere.
So anyway, this was also called the insular G, and which is a softer G, like zh. So anyway, they ditched it because it looks like a three. The next one is ash, and this one you see still. It's that combined A and E that kind of make one little letter. That's ash.
Yeah.
And it's also what Elon Musk named his kid. That letter.
Ash. Is that what it's supposed to be?
Yeah. So they call him Ash, but it's spelled with the Ash letter. And so we still see it in words like ether or people want to pronounce it into the aether, but it's actually just ether.
Ether.
Or ether.
It should be ashther.
It should be ether because it's like the A is like a, ash. Yeah. Anyway, ash. The next one is
so
similar.
Really what it should have been is the A-E and also the weird P, which is the T-H sound, right? Ye, right? So it would have been like A-E and then, what was it called again? The
thorn.
E sound? The thorn. So it would have been ash and thorn next to each other.
Oh.
Is that right?
I don't know.
Is that, I'm trying to apply the knowledge that you've given me. It sounds like that's what you would have had.
Sorry, can you say that from the beginning?
Ash, right? The letter ash, which
the
is the
ash.
A-E.
Yeah.
And then... So if you're reading it as ether, you would have had the TH sound, right?
Yeah. Yes,
so you would have had ash and then you would have had the Y, whatever.
The Y like or the yeah, thorn.
Whatever it was called. The thorn, yeah. So it would have been ash and thorn next to each other. Anyway,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm just trying to apply it.
No, that's actually true. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. Please give me a thumbs up.
Good job.
You're paying attention. Yay.
Of course I am.
No. Me, not you. Oh. I'm saying that's me being like, I'm paying attention. Yay.
Got it. I'm all over the place. Cut all that. So the next one is Ethel. And Ethel is
Ethel Merman.
What's his name? Sam
Worrell. How did he feel about all this? That's what I want to know.
Oh, you know, nothing. He probably didn't feel anything.
He wasn't born yet. Sorry, Sam.
Sam Worrell. The next one is
Ethel.
Sam Worrell. And it's an English man who hates poor people. So Ethel.
Ethel.
And this one you've also seen. It's the O and the E that are squished together.
Yes.
And this one you see in words like subpoena.
Stuff like
that. And especially in British English, they've kept this one around a lot longer than American English. Like when we started, we moved over here and how we spell, we dropped a bunch of stuff. Like in England, encyclopedia and pedophile are both, I guess pedophile is the same in ours too. That pedophile has the ash in it.
Speaking of Elon Musk's favorite things to talk about.
Yeah, pedophiles.
Pedophiles.
And so, sorry, back to Ethel. And it makes an oi sound, which...
Oi, oi, oi.
Which was weird.
Punk rock.
I know. Which was replaced by the just oi once, you know, the typesetters were like, no!
Yeah. No.
But a weird little thing is interesting because in Welsh... the oi sound is spelled O-E. So okay. I was always weirded out. Like, why does this make that sound? And now I know. We're getting through this, okay? Ready? We're almost done.
No, I'm loving it. I'm trying to even apply it.
So Ethel and Ash, we still kind of have around. Now, this one, next one, is really interesting to me. Okay. It's the long S. And it...
Long S.
This makes no sense. So... try to follow, but if you don't, that's okay. So the long S looks like a lowercase cursive F. So if you ever look at...
Oh, man, that was the hardest one. It's like
what?
F.
Oh, I know.
It's just... No, I'm trying to remember. No, that is the... It's like the two loops, right?
If you're going by, like, the American system of writing...
I've never had to think about how if I take out a piece of paper, I could do it, but I don't even remember.
It's like a slanted T with, like, a little
guys
on the end.
It's so muscle memory.
I know.
Yeah.
So it looks like
super muscle memory.
Like a slanted, like a sideways kind of S with a little line through the middle. So it kind of looks like an F. And the long S, they would use it next to the normal S. It had all these little rules where it was like, the long S could be in a sentence with the bigger, the normal S, but only if it was at the end of the word and only if it wasn't at the beginning of the word. So the long S could never be at the beginning of the word.
Yeah.
Which is why they were like, getting rid of this for
English
sure.
English love their rules.
And as long as they can be the ones to make the rules, yeah.
Of course.
But if you look at the Bill of Rights, which I know you do every day, you wake up every morning and read it, right?
I was just reading it earlier, right now, actually, before
we
got on the call.
It says Congress at the top. And it's spelled Congress, long S, because it's at the end of a word. So they actually like included that in the Bill of Rights.
And so is this supposed to be like Congress, like a snake or something? What's the deal?
I have long S confuses me. I couldn't figure it out, but it's still used in calculus. So did you ever take calculus?
No, I'm dumb.
Me too.
I thought we established this.
Well, because you also failed art, math, geometry. So have you ever read any of Shakespeare's original folios?
No, I don't even know what his folios are. I mean, like, I've read the plays
and plays.
Shit.
Plays. So in his actual...
Is that
in,
the
like,
fancy
the old,
word for the play? Is that what folio is? Like a
it wasn't like a
play?
Book. It was just a folio. You know, folios, you're like got like a file, I think. I don't know.
Portfolio?
Like, it's just pieces of paper. All collected.
Yeah, did Shakespeare ever show up to my table and be like, can you look at my portfolio and like give me feedback and let me know if it's...
And we say, this doesn't make sense. You're talking in old, old, dumb English. Just kidding. I love Shakespeare so much. Long, what is this F? Anyway, Congress?
This F doesn't make sense. Congress. Congress. Congresswoman. Congresswoman.
Congresswoman Hillam. No, I would never... So the long S in Shakespeare, you see it all the time. So when I was in high school, I was really into Shakespeare. That's a different story for a different day. But
I like
I remember
how you're embarrassed
like,
by that, but like I'm like that's a good, that means
I'm
you
not.
Were smart. That means that's a smart thing to have had.
All the math stuff I didn't understand made up for it in the way that I could weirdly naturally understand Shakespeare without having to be told, which is a superpower.
That's awesome
in English class.
Yeah.
And that's the only time. Anyway, I wanted to be a Shakespearean actor. So I would read these original folios and I was like, what the heck are these Fs? And didn't understand it at all. And so anyway, that's my experience with the long S.
Long S.
Now the next one is Eng.
Eng.
ng is just the ng sound that comes at the end of words. So if you think about it, ng at the end of words doesn't make sense to have as like a, I mean, it does, thinking. But like thinking, it's just a strange, usually. It's like it's own sound. Ng. And so this one was easy to get rid of because they were like, because the original letter was like an N with like a curved backward tail coming off of both ends.
Weird.
And they were like, easy, just replace it with NG.
It's funny because what that makes me think of is like Vietnamese, because they'll have the NG for so many names at the beginning of it.
Right. And they're not pronounced at all like an N or a G. They're pronounced, isn't it like win?
Yeah.
Like,
but people will be like Nguyen, and you're like, that's like, not win. How it goes at all. Yeah.
Like, somehow it's win. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm saving my favorite for last, which is the ampersand.
Okay.
The ampersand was once a letter, and it was part of the alphabet, and it started out as another letter called the Turonian et, which is the Latin word for and. Which is an E and a T.
That sounds awesome. The Turonian what?
Et. I think it's pronounced.
That sounds like an amazing name for like a bar or something.
Yeah, it does. In like 1500.
Yeah.
Or in like Game of Thrones. You go in there and like.
Or I was going to say Lord of the Rings. It's like where Merry and Pippin and Sam and all them go to drink.
That, you're right. Fan fiction time. That's what I'm writing.
Yeah. The Turonian.
The Turonian et.
I think it's because it sounds like the Taharian et.
There it is.
Sounds most like my
name.
There
it is.
The Taharian et will be the name of my bar.
That's actually pretty clever. So the et looks like an upside down and backwards cursive L. And it just it just meant and in Latin. So the ampersand came out of that. So if you look at the ampersand, early ampersand, it looks like an E and a T. And it's, you know, the ones where it's like, I'll just put a picture. The ampersands that look a lot like an E, a cursive E.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the T. I usually think of it as like a three with like a line through it almost.
The line is the top of the T. So it's E into the T, et.
Right, okay.
And the reason it's called an ampersand is because it came at the end of the alphabet. So we would use it, it would come after Z, and the name itself comes from and per se and, which translates to and per se and. So after Z comes and, which just means like and in and of itself, or and standing
in and
on
of itself.
Own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it'd be like XYZ and per se and. And that blew my mind.
It.
I was like, that's the dumbest name. Let's just say and. But
I'm gonna have to go back after we record this episode, and I actually like it's as I'm recording it, I'm trying my best to process it, but I will go back and listen to this because this is crazy, bizarre. And I'm actually excited to see all the on-screen stuff that we're gonna have to throw up to visualize it, because it's hard for me to not see pictures of it. Yeah, thanks, Alyssa. You're gonna have
posts.
To have a bunch of images. Yeah.
But yeah, I have a little graph or little picture that shows the ampersand, and it's where it started with the ET, and how it slowly through different scripts
the
and texts turned into what we see today, and that's why it's just a symbol for and it's been in the alphabet before. So school kids would learn ampersand in school when learning the alphabet.
And that was the last letter of the alphabet.
Yeah.
This new information that you've provided ruins the entire now I know my ABCs, all right? It's all thrown into question. Somebody needs to write a new version of this.
Ash, ether. Ash, how does the ABC? A, B, C, D, Ash, ether. Thorn.
W, X, Y, Z, ampersand.
Z, ampersand.
Z and ampersand. Now I know my Yach BCs. Yach ABCs with bulls.
So that is why we have such crazy sounds in English that don't make sense when they're spelled, because they used to be separate letters. And
that's awesome.
Make more sense. And English as it's in itself is just the one of the most crazy languages, because it all depended on who invaded England when and what they brought with them and what they mixed into it. So, because they were also invaded later by the Danes. So we get a bunch of Danish crap in there. And there was always the Celtic people trying to invade them. And then the Normans, the French came in in 1066. And William the Conqueror was like, we're only speaking French in court. Anyway, so the English language is crazy and it's a big mishmash of a bunch of stuff.
And super cool, though.
That is my tab.
I love it. You are my, what was it? Nicht in shining armor.
Nicht.
Coming to my rescue to explain to me how the English language makes no sense. My Nicht in shining armor.
One little fun fact is that somebody was like, you don't know how to pronounce Kamehameha in the last episode. And I was like, but wait, I read the phonetic alphabet thing. The like the IPA, the International Phonetic Alphabet.
IPAs? What are you, a middle-aged man making beers?
I knew you were going to say that. But it turns out I don't know how to read IPA. And so, sorry. And that's what got me going on this, is because I was trying to figure it all out. So
I'm done. Thank you guys for your feedback. It led to us having an interesting tab as a result of it, actually.
I know. I love the feedback, even though I get defensive.
No, it's the thing is like the feedback is cool when you have like a, if you're like, here's, because what we want to do is learn. So if you're like here, like you said, like, here's the thing that helped you learn, like this tab that came from it. Like, that's cool. When you're just like, no, you guys are dickheads. You're like, I don't know what to do with that
information. I'm going to keep pronouncing it Kamehameha like a Californian would.
So did you figure, so how are you supposed to pronounce it? Did you figure it out? Or
I was kind of close. It's called Mehameha. Yeah.
Okay.
People are going to love the next episode, the, when I get even butcher more Hawaiian, but that's okay.
Right, because we recorded that before.
Anyway, so yeah, that's my tab. This was an intense episode.
Yeah, that was super cool, though. I loved it.
Yeah, should we do the flush or the?
Yes. Oh no, this one now. So we decided last episode that this is going to actually be the dam, the water,
the sound of because a dam
last
breaking.
Time, yeah, last time was the plane crash. This is where the dam breaks.
Okay.
Mine, like I said, I had to open this up on my desktop. I probably have at least 20 tabs open because of this. So I'm very excited to close this one.
All right. You want to count off?
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. Close.
Beautiful.
That was scary. Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah.
You're free.
It's gone. It's been washed away in time.
With barbed wire.
Covered in barbed wire and on fire. Oh, so horrific. I'm actually glad that yours was lighter, because I was like, I don't feel bad now
purpose.
Anymore. Yes.
There's no human
I've been
death
in a
toll.
Dark space for the past week or two, learning about all this crap. Anyway, we've gone super over. Let's quickly get to our listener emails.
Listener.
The first listener email, this submission is from Jim, who unfortunately we don't know where Jim is from, but let's just say he's from someplace far away.
He's from the ether.
That will do. He's from the ether.
Aether. Come on.
Aether. Aether. Jim writes, Dear 500 Open Tabs, among my friends, I'm the guy with the most powerful, quote unquote, Google foo. So I often end up searching for hours on end for a song that they can only hum, a movie they saw as a little kid, that sort of thing. My girlfriend a while back was searching for a VHS she saw in elementary school of a woman throwing a cake off of a roof to, quote, demonstrate gravity. Apparently, the class went nuts. All I had to go on was, it had something to do with teaching gravity. The cake was blue. On a different tape, she drove a VW bug.
Whoa.
Yep. And so, sure enough, he finds the clip, which Jim has included. And the scene in question is at about 5 minutes, and I'm releasing this tab because I know if I really have to, I can find it again. Good luck and Godspeed with the new podcast, Jim.
We get to watch the video.
You get to watch the video. There's an it's if you want to click on the link, I think it makes you watch an ad, but it delivers. It's a cake being thrown off of like a garage, like in front of a beach, or like not a garage, like a structure like next to a beach. It just goes splat.
Like the exploding whales. I'm gonna watch a bunch of those.
Yes, a bunch of its ruins and insides all come out. Thank you, Jim, for the exploding cake. Yeah. It was really exciting. Also, we know who to reach out to if we can't find a thing that we're looking for.
Jim, do you ever like frequent the Reddit, the r/tip of the tongue? You'd be good at it.
Tip of the tongue?
It's people being like, here's all I know about this memory. Someone help me figure it out.
Oh, okay.
It's on the tip of the tongue.
That.
Yeah. Anyway, so my middle listener mail is from Penny from Bremerton. And Penny says, for 2 years, I've kept a tab open for Polish pottery.
Amateur. Those are rookie numbers.
So Penny with the Polish pottery.
Say that five times fast.
Penny Polish pottery. Yeah. Kept
Penny
a tab
with the
open.
Polish pottery.
I've kept a tab open for Polish pottery. I once randomly came across a picture of a Polish bowl with a traditional folk pattern I loved. So I looked up other Polish patterns and did some research to see if I could buy any Polish pottery dishes. They were expensive, so I never actually bought any of them. But in the meantime, I learned about the village of, Bolesławiec in Poland.
Bolesławiec, okay.
Where the minerals in the clay make stronger, more durable pottery. So maybe someday I'll revisit the tab and buy a bowl. So I can't delete it, or I'll definitely forget about it. Penny.
It sounds like, immediately I keep thinking of like New York pizza, where it's like, if they make this bowl outside of this place, it doesn't quite exactly taste like the same. But if they make it here,
champagne,
the materials are a little bit cheaper. Yeah. That's cool.
I looked at these Polish pottery. They're beautiful.
I was going to say, are you able to send me any of the pictures?
Yeah, I can. They're gorgeous.
Maybe we can throw it up
right
on the screen to look at it.
I'm not going to send them to you right now.
You don't have them right now, but we're going to put them up on the screen so you guys can look at them. I'm excited to look into those. If you guys have a tab that you've closed because you were listening to this podcast and you're a fan of it, please let us know. We'd love to hear about it. You can email us 500opentabs@gmail.com. That's 500opentabs@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. Let us know. Give us like a quick little recap, like what the tab was about. Also, let us know where you're from, because we do love hearing that. And also, most importantly, include the link. And if it's fun and we like it, we'll discuss it on the podcast.
Yes. Please send things in.
Yes. We mentioned this in the last episode, but we do like hearing about it.
Yeah.
We do like the randomness, because it's also fun because you guys give us stuff that we never even would have thought of like looking into.
And it can be something as simple as like, I found a video and I watched this video and here's the video.
Yeah,
anyway.
You could help somebody else unlock some core memory from their childhood that they didn't even know. I'm interested to see if that actually happens with this one. Maybe there's a bunch of kids who had also watched the cake splattering video. They're going to be like, oh my God.
I can't wait to watch
it. Science videos are cool. It's going to be fun.
We're going to be at Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle February 29th through the 3rd.
March 3rd, yeah.
And we'll be sharing a table so you can come say hi. We have art, lots of good stuff.
We'll have books, prints. Hannah's got custom cat drawings that she'll be doing.
I'll draw your pet cat.
Hannah will draw your pet cat. They're huge. Come early, come quickly, because
my wrist dies halfway through. Yeah.
Her wrist dies halfway through. There's always a big crowd. They're all there to get your cat drawings. It's great. I will also be there. I don't have cat. I can try and draw you a cat. It won't be as good as Hannah's.
It'd be fun to watch.
If you want to see a terrible cat drawing, I guess I can commission those as well.
He draws Mothmen.
I draw Mothmen. I draw penguins with cool goggles. I draw snowmen. I draw all snow people, I should say.
Mostly men. Interesting.
Interesting. Wow. This topic I just learned about yesterday. Your silence on this topic I learned about yesterday is deafening. Come see us there if you want to know. So we have a Discord now, and like an old person, it took me a while to figure out that I can have a permanent link. So the permanent link is actually up on our YouTube channel, and it's up on our socials. So join us on Discord. People have been sharing memes and random fun facts. It's really fun. Please join that. Subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends, enemies, your therapist, who else did we say?
I don't know, your estranged mom?
Your psychic.
Oh,
that's
your psychic.
Your estranged mom. This is perfect. You can reach out to your estranged mom and let her know.
Mend.
Be like, Mom, I know we haven't gotten along.
Mend the past.
With a podcast.
With
Mend the past with a podcast.
Polish Pottery Podcast, Penny. Anyway.
Polish Pottery Podcast, Penny.
We're at 500
Open Tabs.
Follow
sponsor links, rate it. Yes, 500 open tabs on everything. I'm at Cafetarian on Twitter, at PermaFriends on Instagram,
at Hannah Hillam on everything.
And yeah, that's it. So tune back in next time, guys. And in the meantime,
stay
Josie.
Josie.
Stay Josie.
Bye.